Everybody, welcome to another episode of Pack One Pick One podcast. I'm Josh Richter. I am here with Mason Lang.
Heyo.
Alec Haste.
Fuck.
And we have our friend Ryan Adams calling in down from Tennessee, back for another episode to just chat and share some ideas with us. How you doing, Ryan?
Hello. Good.
Calling to us all the way from the down dirty south.
Ugh, yes.
God, you poor soul.
That's not all the way down.
I mean, Nashville's there, and, like, there's a really cool guitarist there.
I've been to a GP in Nashville.
Jack White is a fucking twat.
Jack White is a godsend to music.
Oh my god.
The GP that I went to, I actually think I've been to, like, two or three GPs in Nashville, and they were all awesome. I really liked Nashville just in general. Plus, one of our other friends from DeKalb here actually moved down to, I don't know, that area somewhere in Tennessee. I assume it's like Rhode Island where you can kind of walk from one end to the other. I don't know. It's the South. Who cares?
You're an idiot. B.
Davey's across the lake, but we don't talk about him.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. You wouldn't want to... I mean, you shouldn't talk about Davey anyway. He's sketchy.
Poor Davey.
Oh, poor all Davey.
All right. So, we have an interesting idea. I know I pulled... all of you guys on Reddit for some ideas, and all of them were excellent, and I'm pretty sure we're going to revisit every single one of them at some point.
Yeah, I
promises you can't keep, motherfucker!
Yeah, I said I'm pretty sure.
Well, it's going to take us some time to kind of
things,
get everything together and actually form some ideas and some thoughts. Otherwise, we're all just going to be babbling nonsense at the microphone more than we do already.
The time that I pulled you guys, Mason had... a pretty interesting idea about a way to construct a cube differently to keep it fresh and always kind of basically rotating the metagame without, like, just revamping the cube, like, constantly. So...
Yeah, we've been kind of... I mean, Josh has been kind of kicking around different ideas for the better part of a year now about ways to rotate the cube, keep things interesting. A few years ago, probably 5 years ago or so, the general theme of the cube was that every time a new set would come out, we would kind of just jam all the new cards in, right?
Yeah.
Because every new set brings its own mechanics, it brings a ton of new cards, it brings sometimes support for entire archetypes that might not have existed before. And they're cool to add in, but if those archetype or if those mechanics are a little too narrow, or if those archetypes aren't quite wide enough to be supported, or just not as fun, you generally have to let them go by the wayside. A really good example of this was when we talked about our Kaladesh or Aethervolt review, and we talked about energy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Energy is, like, cool, but it's a little narrow, it's a little weak, all things considered, compared to some of the other things you can be doing in cube.
It just requires so many pieces to come together, as opposed to even something like Aristocrats, where, like, you can still sacrifice any creature for value, whereas, like, energy cards require specifically other energy cards to work.
Of which there aren't many, and they're all brand new.
Yeah.
So unless you put in a density of those cards, which don't or may not play well with other archetypes.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
So, and I've noticed in the last maybe few blocks that have come out that jamming all the new cards in and then bleeding them off as we test them out has happened a little bit more slowly. We don't really add as many new cards. And Josh has been kicking around a few ideas lately about ways to keep the cube fresh and new. And his original idea got the idea in my head for what we're calling at this point the Rubik's Cube, because it's a cube made up of smaller cubes.
I think they got it, Mason.
Let me extrapolate on that. The basic idea that I had was, and this is not like a super new idea or anything, I'm not claiming to be the first person to think of this, but it's going to be a cube construction that starts off with blocks of cards that are either 15, 30, or 45, you know, so they correspond with pack size. And they're going to be collections of cards that support specific archetypes, or collections of cards that maybe bolster up, you know, specific themes. For instance, you could maybe have a 30-card package that you title as Energy. And we just, you know, we call through and find every good energy card or every card that supports the energy mechanic, put them all together in a 30-card package, and then set that off to the side. Once you come up with enough of these packages that you can fill up your, you know, 1,000-card long box with,
yeah.
Then anytime you go to start a cube draft, you go into your box, you pull out enough sections until you've built a cube that's either 360 or 450, however many you need. If you only have a 6-man draft,
yeah.
Pull out enough cards for 6 people to draft. If you have a 10 or a 12-man, you've got enough, because yeah. You've got all these different packages you can put together. So that allows you to build a new cube every single time you draft, support every single archetype you could ever imagine, and still be able to have a clean, consistent cube drafting experience once you get everything together, because you're not trying to fit everything into this one 360 or 450. Instead, you have all these different real streamlined packages that you can just kind of jam together, mishmash. Also, you could theoretically have people build their own, right? Like, maybe someone hits you up and is like, hey, I really want to try this out. And they hit you up a week before and you're like, you know, maybe we could try this list. And Josh goes, oh, sure, I have all those cards. Put yeah. that list together and then, bam, jam into the cube and
yeah.
go full steam ahead with that. So that's kind of the idea, and I wanted to talk about it with you guys, maybe draw up some theoretical blocks or lists, and see if it's an idea worth exploring.
Sure. I really like the idea. I like that it allows for pretty open testing of cards, too, that you've never tried based... I mean, a lot of times cards just don't get added because they're just on the cusp of the right power level, but not quite. And, like, they would really supplement a certain archetype really well, but you just can't, like, find space in your 5-slot, or your 5-CMC creature slot in green, right?
Right.
Because there's just clearly better options that are just always, like, the good stuff. And you can have those good stuff cards in this, you know, like, building block cube, but they're now spread out amongst different packages, you know? So I like that it allows for customization and, like, allowing you to like test a lot of new cards from new sets if you really want to, because you can actually slot them into a package instead of like, well, I can't conceivably cut yeah. Moldrifter for this Glyph Keeper, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, and I think, you know, everyone who owns a cube, Ryan and Josh at least can attest to this, everyone that owns a cube has a big box of cards that's like, these are on the bench. Maybe I want them in. They maybe were in at one point, but now they're kind of being pulled back and forth, and they just aren't in right now. And this kind of allows you to build as big of a cube as you want. You could have a 1,200-card cube, theoretically.
Yeah.
But you just pull out what you want to play with it at any given time.
Yeah. Ryan,
so,
do you...
And how would you... some of the questions that I have are, how would you address... power level imbalances, and then would you be alright with a cube that played a little bit rougher because the mana curve isn't particularly consistent, or maybe the colors are imbalanced? Is that something you would try to balance out, or are you just willing to accept that kind of roughness, or there's some friction in the cube design to incorporate the flexibility to bring in all these cards?
Well, I think it depends on how specific you get with your archetypes. So one of the, you know, the part that interests me the most are the really specific ones. My love for Eldrazi really plays into this well, because you have a section maybe that you call Eldrazi, and it's like a 45-card block or a 30-card block, something like that. But the real bread and butter is going to be the more generalized ones, the ones that you would expect to see in other people's cubes. So you have, let's say, a 45-card land block, right? And that's up fairly... That's kind of a low number for a 360 cube, right?
No, that's 45? Right on.
Oh, 45. Okay,
45 would be right on.
Perfect. Cause... Okay, so if you have 45 lands set aside, right, you can basically assume that that's going to make it into your cube draft every time, because, I mean, you need lands, right?
Yeah.
So you always start with that being one of your building blocks for the rest of the cube that you're going to build. you can balance the colors by just going through and making sure you're balancing things fairly well when you put the list together. If Josh goes, here are the 8 card blocks we're going to play with for this, you know, quote, 360 that we're about to play. If he goes, I want all the blue ones and none of the green ones, fuck that. Then you're obviously going to have an imbalanced cube experience.
Yeah.
But if instead he goes, I'm going to grab the 45 card mono red aggro block. I'm going to grab the 45 card green ramp block. I'm going to grab the 45 card white aggro block. Then he builds himself up a very normal looking 360 card cube. It might miss some things, some little cross synergy cards. But that's when you get down to the smaller 15 card packages and you look at and you say, okay, well, I want to include, you know, the green red aggro cards. So you grab the 15 card green red aggro slot or block and you add it into your cube. Maybe he says, I want to play with extra lands. So he grabs an extra 15 card land block, which is normal because we usually play with cubes that have a high land density anyway. So I think the color balancing becomes a problem when you don't put that much thought into what blocks you're going to add in. But for the most part, you know, we could look at having 50 different blocks made out, but you only need to play with 8 of them. And you give yourself that option when you go to put the cube together. Alternatively, I'll say this, maybe Josh and all of us put together these 50 different blocks or these 50 different cube themes. We add them all into this big pile and then we have everyone say, hey, guys, pick out what you want to play with this week. We'll just shove them all together and go. And I'm like, oh, that's great. Okay, I want to play with Storm. So we grab the Storm block. And our friend says, oh, I want to play with Burnstorm. So put that in there too. And then, you know, my brother says, hey, I want to play with Summer Storm. So grab the Summer Storm block. And then Josh is like, oh my God, we have 4 different storms. It's literally half the cube.
Yeah.
And that kind of gives everyone their little custom play experience. Like, these are the cards I really wanted to play with. And maybe that doesn't come out as the most balanced thing in the world. Maybe things aren't super color balanced. Maybe things aren't perfect. But ultimately, when you're putting it together, I think you can balance out the numbers like that.
Or maybe someone takes, like, all the payoff cards and you have 3 terrible decks and 1 super awesome Storm deck.
It's possible. It's possible. That's,
yeah.
That seems horrendous.
You're talking about 3 people having bad decks and 1 person having a really good deck, but you're talking about, like, literally almost half the cube just supporting Storm. So the idea that multiple people wouldn't be able to put together a good Storm deck is, I think that's just unrealistic. I mean,
yeah.
I guess it depends on what's in the packages, sure. But, like, if someone... Because, like, you still have to draft these cards. So yeah. If someone just drafts all the payoffs, then you got 3 guys who can make a ton of mana or play a bunch of spells in the same turn, but only 1 guy who can fucking brain freeze you or 1 guy who can empty you or whatever it might be. You
know, well, sure, but
it won't always happen
not...
that way. I get it. Right. But, you know, we're talking about inherent balancing, and part of the reason I hated this from the get-go is because it just seems so wild. You know, uh-huh. I mean, like, it's compelling to add these new cards in there, but Josh, you mentioned earlier this would be good for testing. I completely disagree. I think there will be certain packets of cards that will seem really good with these other packets, and these others where they'll just get fucking shit on, and you'll be like, oh, these cards are garbage, or these cards can only be played in context. At that point, it's almost like you're building a separate cube. It's just that little portion can only be played with X, Y, and Z, or A can only be played with B, C, and D, if the cards, like, the disparity between those packs are that heavy. And I think that this definitely opens the door for that to happen. You talked about color balancing. When I was thinking about putting some of these packages together, the first question, would there be overlap? Like, could I find Muldrifter in, like, 3 different packages or whatever?
So I actually think that's one of the more interesting points about the cube construction, because I think you can do it either way. But I know me and Josh, at least, have always been on generally the same wavelength when it comes to multiples in cube, and that
yeah.
They're generally pretty sweet. Like, it's cool when you can have multiple of an essential card or a really interesting piece. A good one that gets brought up all the time with me and Josh is Gravecrawler.
Yeah.
We talk about Gravecrawler and how, like, oh, it would be sweet if you could have 4 Gravecrawlers, you know, like the same way we have Squadron Hawks. But it's just a little tough to actually, you know, pull that trigger. But for instance, if you have a zombie block and you have a mono black aggro block, maybe each of them have 1 Gravecrawler. So if you happen to put both of those blocks in the same cube draft, which you don't have to do if you don't want to,
yeah,
then you could find yourself with multiple copies of the same card in a draft. So I think you can do it that way, where you have overlapping cards in different card blocks. I mean, it might come down to a card availability issue. Obviously, we can't put one Jace the Mind Sculptor into each one. And have
well, sure, yeah. Not you're not gonna have three players at the table running Tabernacle. I get it,
right?
Yeah. You know, like that's probably not okay anyway. But
yeah, I think for certain cards or certain very flexible cards, I think I at least would be a fan of seeing multiples across the cube,
okay,
across the different card blocks at least.
Because when you talk about color balance, I imagine putting these packages together. Like, let's say I want to do a Kiki combo package.
Yeah,
it's gonna have like four different colors with the cards in it.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
it could, or something like that.
Absolutely.
So like at that point, you know, if maybe some of like if you got 50 red cards, 40 blue cards, and like 60 green cards, that's not the hugest disparity in the world.
No, there's a lot of cubes, you know, that already have numbers close to that anyway.
Yeah, or so. Something of that nature. Like, that's not abhorrent, I guess.
Yeah.
It just feels like this landscape is too easily warped.
Well, I think that's where, like, the planning and the actual, like, construct of each block, like, time has to be taken very meticulously in building it before you ever put it together with all of that in mind. Like, and I think, like, yes, you could have four people all want to play Storm, but I think before you actually do that draft, you'd say, guys, we're not having four different Storms in this draft because we need actual, like, variants in the cube. Like, you're going to get, like, you two get your Storms in, but, like, we're going to play with these other things because we want a balanced draft. Like, nobody wants to sit there and, like, only see Storm cards in the whole
draft. Unless you had eight people who all wanted to play Combo Cube and are just like, I want Sneak Attack, I want Burn Storm, I want Summer Storm, I want High Tide Storm, I want... And you get eight
How do you
who are
read
like,
those signals? Yeah. Storm deck it's, open.
Probably. Who knows? But it's the wild fucking west, right? Because you know you have eight people who knew what was going in before they started. And it doesn't have to be that way, right?
I mean,
you can be like, no, fuck off. Like, we don't want your thing. You have to pick something else. Sure, you could do that. I'm just saying...
Doesn't that completely destroy the mentality of this cube, though?
Well, that's... Yeah. The pure customizability of it allows you to do whatever you want, right? If Josh is like, you know, I've never tried the mono blue cube. All the blue cards in, and we'll throw in, like, some supplemental artifacts.
Yeah.
And run it. We could do that 1 week, and then the next week do something completely different, right? That's the idea, at least.
So... I guess if we want to pursue this idea a little bit further, what size do you think that... I personally think that 45-card packs are too big. One of the things I've certainly been exploring, and this is something we could go into on another cast, is the use of AsFan when you design your cube, or how many cards in a pack are from a certain archetype. And so the magic number for 360... is 24 cards, I believe, would give you one card from that block in each pack. Do you think that, you know, 24 cards, that's enough to build your deck. Do you think that a good dividing line to go ahead with, or is that too much to do?
The thought I had on the numbers originally was just to keep it with the pack size so that it makes it very easy to count up your
when
cube before you build it. So you're like, okay, 15, 45, 45, 30, 30, you know, and you just count up to however many you need. But that is a really interesting point. So 24 cards. So if you, let's say, had 30 card package, and I mean 45 is big, right? That would be for really generalized archetypes,
like,
or archetypes that go super deep,
right?
You know, if you look at an average 360 legacy cube, I think you can easily pull out most of the red cards and say this is the mono red aggro stuff, right? So the idea that you would maybe have 45 red aggro cards, I mean, is that a little heavy? It might be.
I would say that's pretty high, but it's...
But, you know, not all the cards are going to wind up in that guy's deck, right? Because what Alec was saying earlier, not all the cards are going to go into one guy's deck, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to add those 45 mono red aggro cards, and then you're going to be able to pick those Goblin Guides and Zergos and Grim Lavamancers, whatever you got, and someone else might pick up the Lightning Bolt and the Chain Lightning that were in there, you know? Someone else might pick up a Wheel of Fortune, whatever's in that section, you know, it's not all going to the same guy. So if you did, let's say, 30 card packages, and you kind of assume that 24 number that you just mentioned, then I think that gives you enough play to where you're kind of going to be seeing those cards. You're going to be able to open them, you know, open the packs and see what's in there, but also give you a little bit of flexibility in case things don't go your way. You know, that little 6-card buffer or so in between 24 and 30 that makes sure that people can kind of put their decks together. Because it is probably, I'm not sure if the draft experience would come out being a little bit more high variance, because you just aren't, until you have every package memorized, and you'll memorize some of them faster than you will with others, because we'll play with them more often, or they'll be more intuitive.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to be like, I want to add the energy package, and then open up my pack and see that there's two cards that say energy on them, and be like, you know, I know that what package this was out of. Whereas if you open one up and you're like, Monastery Swift Spear, you're like, oh, I don't know which package that was pulled from. I don't know exactly what's in this cube draft just based on my opening pack. So I think,
well,
like,
and that's still under the assumption that we're doing color identity. For example, let's say you wanted a 30-card pack, and this is the removal pack. Yeah. This has fucking Maelstrom Pulse and Go for the Throat and Lightning Bolt and Counterspell or some shit. I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, there's no rule it all has to be one color either. Like,
right,
that
right.
would be sort of the generalized play package that you could play in the majority of your cubes, because it's right. not color specific. It's just like, oh, okay, this is your quote-unquote good stuff.
Yeah.
Or if you want to have, like, a 15-card Big Dumb Dude package that's got yeah. Grizzlebrand, that's got Elshnorn, that's got Woodfall Primus, fuck all those yeah. kind of cards, you know. Maybe all the Titans are in there, some shit. I was thinking when you said the Eldrazi thing. So my Eldrazi package has Eye of Ugin. It has Eldrazi Displacer. It has Titans. It has Cloud Post. You know, something yeah. like that. So I suppose it depends on specifics as to how that would actually look. And that's one of those, I think if you do it like that, then color balance isn't as important. But it does, I think the problem Josh and I addressed earlier, if this is for funsies, maybe it works a little better in theory, but if you're a power gamer like I am, you're just taking all the best cards out of every, like, little package and just building around them and then forcing people out of decks, you know, because you have all the best cards to do them.
Well, know? I mean, you can do that, right? Because you're not, I want to play with these cards, so I put that block into the cube, and now I just, that's what I'm going to play with. There's a pretty good chance that whatever cards you wanted in, you're not actually going to be able to draft. There are 7 other people at the table. I mean, you get to decide what's going in, but you don't get to decide what you're drafting right away. I mean, yeah. you can try to force things, but that doesn't usually work out for you.
Well, more accurately, force people out. Like, if you just take all the best, like, payoffs or some of the best enablers that make those payoffs worth it, like, you can just force people out of decks if these packages are small enough. Like, say someone wants to play with the Kiki pack, and the mm-hmm. Kiki pack's, like, 10 cards, you know? Say I take the Kiki and the Splinter Twin, it doesn't matter if I play them or not, now no one else can play that deck.
Well, sure, but that's the argument to hate drafting anything, right? You're firebombing yeah. your own pick order in order to maybe dick someone else over. And, as most people with cube experience can tell you, hate drafting is almost never worth it, because the chances that they either get shipped to someone who's not going to make good use of them, or you never play against that person, just pretty likely. So,
well, but yeah, if these, like, packages are so specific, like, if I take the Kiki and the Splinter Twin, I might be able to still make use of either both of those cards, or, like, again, if you just shit on someone out of that deck, you might see those cards come around, and say we're playing with the removal package. Well, I'm still going to want the Counterspell. I'm still going to want the Lightning Bolt. I can still build a coherent deck, and I can force other people not to. Again, if you're the power gamer, maybe that's something that's more, that you're more privy to. Not everyone's going to do that, and it seems kind of like a selfish dick move in a format like Cube to be like that, you know? I mean,
well, I'm not the hero people want.
I'm the hero they deserve.
I just don't think that sounds realistic. So that's like saying in any 360 or 450 card cube, you can dick over anyone from playing anything, right? You're like, well, Josh can try to draft Mono Blue Control, but if I just pick the Mystic Confluence and the Cryptic Command and the Jace the Mind Sculptor, then fuck him. He's gonna, you know. I mean, if you pick Splinter Twin and Kikichi, like, awesome, that's cool. Maybe you'll stick someone with a Deceiver, Exarch, or a Pestermite they don't want. But what else? Like, you're gonna stick someone who happens to have a Restoration Angel and Zealous Conscripts in their deck now? Oh, bummer.
Well, again, it depends on the, how specific some of these, you know, packages look, you know. And as far as I'm concerned, if they're not specific, what the hell are we even doing this for? You know, like, I mean, wouldn't that be the theory that we're playing?
I mean, you even mentioned playing with cards. Here's an idea for you as a point to all this. Color identity. Me and my roommate were talking about this before I came over here, and he said, you know, you could start with, like, a base of cards to give all the colors an identity. And it's like, well, then the argument arises that what's the color identity? Because how often have we wanted to do something like mono green aggro? But you have to compete. You have to put those mono green aggro slots up against the mono green ramp slots. This cube configuration, you take that tension out. Because you can either play with all the mono green ramp cards, or you can just slam the mono green aggro, or
yeah,
whichever one I didn't say, the mono green aggro cards in for this draft. So then you don't have to worry that, like, oh, like, I've got these few mono green aggro cards, but they're kind of competing with the mono green ramp cards, and the tension is there. Instead, you can just be like, no, we're not playing with any of the mono green ramp cards. We're just playing with the mono green aggro stuff this time, right? And then you can go right back to it the next week if you don't like the way that it played. But the point is that you can completely redefine... Sorry, one second. You can just completely redefine color... the blueprints for the colors that you're playing.
Yeah.
Well, what's up, Ryan?
So is that an argument for... So if you put in, if you truly put in 45 cards in, into each one of these mini blocks, you're pushing Morrowind levels of theming, that having two cards in each pack, how do you keep the cube from being very on rail? Is that an argument for smaller packages rather than bigger ones, so people will have to mix and match?
Yeah, well, I do.
I think... When Mason was describing the idea, like, he only mentioned the 45-card packages, like, I think it wouldn't be only 45-card packages. I think we would have, like, 20 15-card packages, 20 30-card packages, 20 45-card packages, maybe 10, you know, 60-card packages. Like, you know, who knows? Like, I think that it's... That would be part of the whole construction of the entire, like, cube from the ground up, would be deciding how big each package should be to be worth supporting that archetype in the first place, or,
yeah, you know, the way, whatever. The way that I kind of thought a lot of the block construction would come up was, like, let's say, you know, we were pitching the idea, like, I want to do Eldrazi, right? And so we can just sit here and come up with a list of every single good Eldrazi, and however many cards that comes out to, let's say it's 17 cards or something. Like, we actually think these 17 cards are great, they're cubable, like, we would play them, all things considered, if we had access to all the other ones. So then we say, okay, we'll cut two of them down and make a 15-card package. Or we say, well, how about mono green aggro? And we say, okay, what are all the good mono green aggro cards? And we would list them all up and be like, well, it's you know, 33 cards or something. And we're like, okay, well, we'll cut a few down and we'll make a 30-card package for mono green. I think it comes down to, like, a 45-card package, a 45-card block is hard to get to. I mean, like, that's a lot of cards. You need a really generalized, very, very deep archetype. Something that...
Or lands.
Yeah.
Or lands. So, yeah. You know, you're looking at something like...
Blue
counterspell. Yeah, like, blue... Or, like, you know, really good blue cards. I mean, I've got, like, a... Here's a theoretical 15-card package for you that you could just... have sitting there. You could add to any cube draft, right? All right, here we go. First list. Dope-ass blue cards. Got it. Preordain, Ponder, Brainstorm, Thought Scour, Snapcaster Mage, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Cryptic Command, Mystic Confluence, Mana Drain, Counterspell, Vendilion Click, Remand, Jace Balerion, Delver of Secrets. Hey.
I would like the listeners to know that it legitimately says dope-ass blue cards at the top of his sheet of paper that he has been writing on for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, so you can just be ready to go, and you're like, oh, well, I mean, like, we tossed in the mono-blue aggro package that was 15 cards. Let's toss in dope-ass blue cards and finish it off.
Yeah.
All right. And then we'll throw in, like, white devotion and blue-white control cards. You know, we'll take the mono white devotion 15 card package, and we'll throw it in with the, you know, the 30 card blue white control package, or the 15 card blue white control package, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think the way to keep the draft off rails is by supplementing the potential 45, like, 'cause you don't need to grab a bunch of 45 card packages for your cube, right? Maybe you decide we want to do the 45 card red aggro package, and the whole rest of the cube is just going to be 15 or maybe some 30 card packages, you know? You just fill the rest of it up with these real small kind of specific things, and then let everyone go nuts with all these different cards.
Do you think you should try and come up with some arbitrary level of power in each thing, so you don't have one package doing the unloved drawing card circling the drain action we see in something?
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I was thinking about... So, I think one of the biggest hurdles to cross, to jump over with this cube design is the sheer amount of work that it would take. One, getting the actual list together, which is a huge initial investment of time and brain power and effort, but then is pretty easy to maintain after that, right? Because you basically never have to take them apart, right? That those are like your working, you know, bench.
We together have those three. Josh has the time, I have the brain power, you definitely have the effort.
Hey! Thanks, Alec, I guess. We have Ryan's giant brain, too, so that will definitely help.
Well, guess you don't need me. So long, guys.
Hey, see you later, Alec. Oh, finally. Now it can just be our three podcast.
I know, the listeners have probably been waiting for this for a long time.
I hope so.
I'm not ready.
I forgot what I was talking about.
Fuck you. Like I said, the hurdle was
all of the initial build.
Right.
And then?
And then it's fairly easy to maintain. The other, another big hurdle is the actual time it takes setting up and breaking down the cube draft before and after. The initial setup time isn't as bad. You just grab the packages, you shuffle them all together, you're good to go. The breakdown afterwards is a huge pain in the ass, because you need to take apart everything, put them back into their original categories, and then put them away. And I think to do that, you probably have to, like, you know, you have to give the front, the sleeve of the card on the front, some kind of annotation. I was thinking, like, a little Sharpie mark. Maybe you use the letters of the alphabet, maybe use numbers, I don't know what they are.
I've seen people do that on, like, the perfect fits underneath your actual sleeves.
Yeah.
And
that doesn't sound like a bad idea. So however you wind up doing it, but, I mean, that is actual, like, just a time investment every time you want a cube draft, right? It's a little bit of a pain in the ass, but I don't think it's too bad because, I mean, we make for our art, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'll just go home and make Josh do it.
Well, I know Josh would probably do it. But also, you know, you've got 10 people there. You've got like hanging out that can all help it happen pretty quick. So I don't think it'll be too bad. And it gives you... So the reason I started talking about that was because... You would also, I guess, for the physical construction of the cube, you would have, like, each section of the cube divided by, you know, some kind of spacer card.
Yeah.
And on that card, you could actually just write, like, the info about it, right? Like, how many cards it is. Maybe, like Ryan said, you could give it some kind of arbitrary power rating. Like, man, dope-ass blue cards, that's 10 out of 10. Boom, right?
Yeah.
Five-color zombies, not the strongest aggro package in the cube. You know, mono red aggro, we give that one a 9 out of 10. That thing's a slam dunk. There's some powerful ass cards in that. Five color zombies? Look, alright, we'll give that one a 6. Solid 6.
Just,
you know,
like
combo combo reanimator? Alright, we'll give that one, you know,
like an 8 out of 10.
An 8 out of 10 because it's a strong combo package. Kiki combo package, we'll give that one a 9 out of 10 because it's super powerful. Mono white aggro, sure, we'll rate that one highly.
Seismic Assault Gilded Lotus, 4 out of 10.
Yeah, like, and you're like, the lands package, like the 43 land dot deck, but in cube form, that one, that's more of a fun one.
Yeah.
Give that one, you know, a solid 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Fun out of 10. And,
fun out of 10.
And, you know, Delirium, or Energy, or...
Probably more like a 5 or a 6.
Yeah, like you could have some lower powered one. So then, yeah. If you kind of go through and you assign those, albeit maybe arbitrary numbers, it would give you a better handle on making sure you don't have wildly spiking power levels in your cube. And a lot of that would also probably come down to Josh's knowledge of his own cube and the packages that are in it. Because then he could go, well, you know, five color zombies, really not that strong of a package for the cube configuration we're going forward with now. But I do know there are a couple other packages in right now. They're like, you know, we added the extra land package, so the mana's going to be a little easier. We added some of the more multicolored stuff. So I think the actual value of the different zombies
right.
is going to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe we added a couple of the other tribal packages, so there are a few more cards that pay you off for tribal synergies.
Right.
So I think the zombies will be a little better.
Alec, for you, this also allows for play of, like, you could do a power draft, like, every so often, because you could literally have, like...
A 15-card power.
Like, you could have dope-ass magic card, or, like, broke-ass magic cards. And it's, like, the Power 9, plus Soul Ring, Mana Crypt, Mana Drain, Mind Twist, Gush, you know, and just,
like
have...
LED...
Yeah, like, and just have, like,
Pendril
the
Veil,
broken,
library
the broken block, yeah. You know, and, like, now we're playing Vintage Cube for a week, you know,
yep.
Like, which is... fucking awesome.
That sounds
except that you guys would stop asking me to come because I would pick that package every single time.
And you know what? While you were picking that, I'd be picking Storm, and I would be like, sweet, there's a Mana Crypt for my Storm deck.
Yeah.
Dope shit.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of cross synergy that I'm excited about. Like, you know, the obvious problems you run into when you're like, well, I picked out this combo package and I included it, and I'm worried that someone else might cut me off. But... seven other people also picked cards for this, and I know that I'm going to pick up stuff from their packages that I didn't have access to before, and they're going to be awesome. There's not, like, for instance, let's say you do the power pack, right? It's like, cool, we didn't include any of those cards in the storm, in the, you know, 30-card storm package, because we didn't want it to be too good or too broken or whatever
yeah.
it is. So, but now, Alec picked out Power, so now I get to play with Moxes, Mana Crypts, and Soul Rings, and Time Twister, and fucking...
Necropotence Yawgmoth's Bargain, yeah, like...
Get after it, right? So, I think that kind of cross-synergy comes up, and then you're just like, you get to kind of be excited about what's going to come up this week, you know? Who knows? We get to play with all these different cards in this configuration that's never happened before. Because I'm not good at math, I'm sure Ryan could figure it out, but if we have...
actual Frank
1,200 Karsten. Different cards, and we're only ever going to play with 360 of them at a time, and they can come together in any combination of different 45-card packages. I don't know how many potential cubes that is. It's probably a lot. So
you could find out by cubing the number.
Of zeros
yeah. Hundreds of zeros. You heard it here first.
Well, couldn't we just take the number of cards and then cube it?
Delightful.
That was a math pun. And I'm probably going to go upstairs and kill myself.
I was going to say, like, that's like some Britcher level stuff.
Yeah.
Right there.
God.
Like, there's a little part of me that died. I mean, it's too late now.
Sorry, Britcher, I love you.
So, is the goal, Mason, then, to... I'm somewhat stuck on power level here. Is the goal to create... to mess with... cards that are only of a certain level, that are only good enough for, you know, a legacy style cube. Randy Buehler did a couple years ago something called Gauntlet of Greatness, where he looked at a whole bunch of
which episode was that?
And battered them against each other, and that you could do that the same with limited archetypes. So you don't have it delirium. My delirium deck's great because I have survival within it, and you know. Recurring nightmare. Like, yeah, my door index great, but that's not why. That's, you know, the mechanic, you know, mind will not matter at that point.
Sure. Okay. I got you. Well, I think the power level of. I don't think you want to homogenize it. I don't think you want to say across these 1,000 different cards we want to potentially have for the cube, I don't think we want to keep them all at legacy cube level power. But I think what you get is you probably get a varied power level. You probably get some packages that you know are full of these insanely broken cards, and some that are, you know, a little bit more down to earth, a little bit more reasonable. I don't know exactly where that power level balance comes in because I don't have it in front of me. I don't know how difficult it is to slap everything together and say, this is a balanced cube. But I think that kind of thing is a little bit self-regulating, because if you fill it up with too many broken-ass cards, then, like you said, it doesn't maybe matter specifically what's going on in the very, very, the nitty-gritty of the whole thing. But instead you get a more general power level. So it's like, well, I'm doing all this broken stuff, and then I'm just kind of killing them with whatever rag I have at the end of the thing, right? Like, what Alex said earlier, where you're like, you have these decks that are just making tons of mana and drawing lots of cards, but then they don't have their payoff at the end. Well, it's like, well, if you're drawing enough cards and you're making enough mana, you can kill them with anything. I don't care. I've definitely had Legacy and Vintage Cube Drafts online where my Storm deck didn't come together because I didn't get any of the Storm cards, and my win condition then became casting Time Warp and looping it with Time Spiral and Time Twister and resolving a Karanos so I could bolt my opponent to death, you know? Like, it's about finding the backdoor then, where maybe things didn't go super well for you, but you can, you know, the rest of your deck is so powerful that you can kind of just kill them with whatever leftovers you have. And I think you would find the same thing happens when the power level's super skewed. If you include a package that turned out to be a really wrong fit, you're like, man, we thought this was going to be fine, but turned out that it was considerably weaker than everything else that was going on in the draft this week. I think it's a little bit it has a little bit of self-balancing, because you can be like, yeah, you know, my Survival of the Fittest reoccurring nightmare black-green Delirium deck, like, was great, but it wasn't great because of the Ishkanah, the Traverse the Ubenwald. It was great because of, you know, all those super powerful black-green cards that you would find anyway. And you say, like, okay, like, but I still need to kill him with something, and Ishkanah does the job as well as anything else, you know, so.
I guess my thought was more towards that if you wanted this to kind of grow and evolve as your sets come in and new mechanics come in, you're certainly going to choke out some of the, I think Morrow calls them A plus B mechanics, things like Madness, where you need, you know, a Madness card plus a way to discard it.
Okay.
That if you choose to keep it at Legacy power level, you're going to have a hard time achieving, putting those limited mechanics in and having them function the way they're designed.
Okay, right on. Well, not, maybe everything's not viable. I mean, like, maybe you can't build a package out of everything, or maybe, you know, what Alec had mentioned before, where some things are a little too narrow. You know, if you have a 15-card Madness package that's just a little weak, like, unless you combine it with this package or that package, or that block or this block, right? Then those are a little narrow, those are a little too... you could, I mean, off the top of my head, there's a way to fix that, and that is by making the package a lot bigger. So you have this 15-card Madness package, you have this 15-card Delirium package, and you have this 15-card...
Cycling package.
And then you say, okay, well, we're just going to throw them all in together as one big Graveyard Matters package.
Yeah.
That's a 45-card package now.
Discard.
So we know that those cards are never going to wind up, like, hanging out solo, right? We're never going to accidentally, you know, randomly generate a cube and have these cards be all mismatched, you know? We can lump them together and even then maybe add some cross cards that are cool that maybe we wouldn't have had a chance to put in any specific category. So now we have a larger package that kind of encompasses a few more things, and if we kind of rebrand it, name it something different to give it a more cohesive identity, then we have the opportunity to not ever find it out on its own, you know? We have a better chance of it coming together because you have more cards to support it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Would you consider building around multiple copies of a single card? Would you consider an Astral Slide deck, a Burning Vengeance deck, a Spider Spawning deck?
Sure. I mean, theoretically, right? You could do whatever you wanted. I don't know. Josh, what do you think? I was thinking, like, if you had multiple blocks that had one-offs each.
Yeah.
But having multiples in the same one, I mean, theoretically you could do that, right? Because you could do whatever you want. You could be like, this is the spider spawning package. It has three copies of spider spawning in it. Fuck it. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, I think the beauty of this is, like, if anyone attempts to do this, like, say we do this, you know, like, maybe I'm all for adding multiples because I already have the draft one, get three of kind of a thing. Or, like, when I built the horror cube, there's multiples of certain cards in there. I think, like, if you're okay with it and your playgroup is okay with it, like, you can just, like, build a block that has, you know, three Astral Slides in it. Or an Astral Slide Lightning Rift and, what is the black one? The black something devoted.
Yeah, Faith of the Devoted.
Faith of the Devoted. You know, so you push that deck, then... by all means, or if you just want, like, four Astral Slides in the cycling package, you know, so that it makes, you make sure that that deck gets drafted instead of having these one-ofs that, like, just are gonna circle the drain otherwise. I think that's okay if you're against the whole multiples thing and, like, you just want to build the whole Rubik's Cube with every block of it being singleton and never having overlap. I think that's okay, too. That's where Mason's, like, hurdle of, like, all the work comes in. But, like...
Yet that... I think it's really hard to do that because you at some point you run into, like, well, shit, I have this Gravecrawler. I want to put it in the Mono Black Aggro. I also want to put it in the, like, Madness Graveyard Matters Aggro with all the, like, Scrap Heap Scroungers and Dread Wanderers and bullshit like that. And then I even want to also put it in the zombie, like the mono black zombies or whatever. And you're like, fuck, I have this one card. I need to decide exactly where I'm going to put it in. And that has to be right. And then when I get down to it, I have to decide whether I'm going to switch cards around depending on the exact configuration. Whereas I think instead, if you kind of accept that you might just have multiples in these other things, if you have the card availability at least, if you have three or four copies of Gravecrawler that you can spread across these different things, then put them in a box and maybe not touch them for 6 months. If you have that luxury, if you have that opportunity, I think that's a really... That's the way I would approach it, at least, in the beginning, right? I think keeping everything as a strict singleton seems a little unrealistic, and it seems like a lot more work, whereas if you kind of just let everything flow out how you want.
I almost wonder if it's not really even viable. Like it, or, like, not that it's not viable, but that it...
Feels limiting.
Well, it just feels like, why not just build... A regular cube. Instead of, like, being able to build these customized blocks that where you have cards that have so much cross synergy, like, there's no reason not to include them if you're building that kind of archetype, right? Like, so, whereas if you're strict, if you're limiting yourself to singleton, then you might as well just build a regular cube.
I think the workaround for that might be, and we've talked about this several different ways, the workaround for that would probably be to have a base cube that you then added these blocks to. So you would have something like a 150, 160, between 1 and 200 card maybe, cube, and then before draft time, you would grab your different blocks, you'd throw them all in.
Yeah.
So then you would see these, like, flexible kind of general cards in your main cube, and then you would accent them afterwards. Now, I don't think that's a great idea.
I don't either, and I know Alec didn't either, which is actually...
Alec, do you want to explain why maybe that's not... the best idea in the world?
Having the base versus...
Having the base cube that you then accented instead of just going completely ground up every time.
Well, my reasoning for that being poor is that you can always... Like, once you figure out what is in the base, you can just kind of take the rest as they come. There's just no value in moving in on those sort of things early unless you decide that you just want to play those things. You just
and
build...
When you say that, you're talking about the accented blocks.
Yeah, the accented blocks. There's just no reason to move in on them. Like, you take the base cards, you know, it's like doing a regular draft. Yeah. You know, you get your, you know, 15 or so cards that you're always going to play, and then your other 8 or however many you want to play, those are like the bombs or, you know, the big dumb things or the defining parts of your deck. But because this environment is so much more powerful than your shitty limited environment, where out of those 15 cards, you're going to have, like, bullshit 5 drops and stuff like that, it just seems like there's just no reward for those accented packages existing. you know, other than it's like, oh, okay, I can do this thing this time if I want to. Yeah. Like, if you're into the varied play experience, sure. But again, as the power gamer, like, the correct strategy seems like to just draft the base cards or draft all the reasonable cards that you know for a fact you're going to play. And then, you know,
catch whatever's left in your colors on the wheel.
Yeah, because it's all accented so they can all play. Yeah. So, like, you just take a few here, take a few there, and then put something together out of it. I think it's going to inherently homogenize things. So that even once you get these accented packs, like, you know what you got to play around. It's the base cards.
Yeah.
You know, like, unless it's some stupid, like, fucking Kiki combo or whatever. But for the most part, like, it just feels very unrewarding. You know, and as a draft, like, a powerful draft strategy to just let these things kind of happen, like, I just don't see the point.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. That's why... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Ryan.
Is it possible that you guys have mentioned some of the logistical challenges of this with a new, already an established queue? But could this be a good way for a playgroup to build a new queue from a pile of cards that they have? I know that we see a lot of posts on the Cube Reddit that are like, I started with this, you know, these are the cards that I own. Rubik's Cube idea of building archetypes and bringing them into each other, could that be a good way to build a new cube?
I think so.
Maybe more customized to your playgroup.
I think actually it would be very beneficial to figure out what, A, like you just mentioned, your playgroup, what your playgroup likes to play with, for one. What you see people draft most often and feel most rewarded by drafting. And it lets you understand what you can support in a cube and what you can't, like, based on, like, the availability of just cards in Magic. Like, you know, say, like, we'll take Energy, for example. Energy is such a very, like, narrow and, like, A plus B dependent mechanic. Like, you need such a threshold of cards that produce energy for you in the first place, but there's so very few really good payoff cards. Like, by building the energy block and, like, adding it in for a few drafts or whatever, you may realize, oh, it just isn't working out. Like, so I'm not going to build my cube with energy anymore. Like, you know, and you're going to find, like, maybe you come down to, like, 6 to 8 blocks that you really, really like, everybody always wants to draft with. Now you've got the base for your cube, and then you get to add in other cards that supplement what you've crafted. I think it's an excellent way to kind of figure out where you want your cube to be for you and your players.
It's also kind of an interesting idea, right? If you want to have a cube in your community, but you don't have someone like Josh here who's willing to take the burden of owning all the cards, keeping them up constantly,
yeah,
and then putting them all together. I think one of the things you might be implying here is we did something for your birthday last year, Ryan, that was you called it the board cube at the time, but we basically, you had everyone who was going to participate bring 45 cards. We just shuffled them all together and played, you know,
yeah,
a makeshift limited environment. And it was a lot of fun. It was wild. It was unbalanced. Everything was generally pretty bad. but it was a lot of fun. And I think everyone enjoyed it quite a bit. And you could see a very similar thing happening with this kind of Rubik Cube idea, right? Where maybe you have a few people in your community who have nice collections.
Yeah.
Maybe those people each want to put together 100 cards or so, and then come together, and through this building strategy, everyone brings their own packages and comes and shuffles them together. And then maybe you say, well, I like this week, I didn't like this so much this week, I have an idea for next week, I'll build something else. And they come back and they're like, well, I've still got these same 90 cards, but I added a different 45 on the end, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, if you want to take a bunch of singletons, slam them, you know, that you and your friends all have. Want to take a bunch of singletons, slam them at each other, and figure out what cards you do and don't like, play fucking Commander.
No. You are undermining the way that it can come together. Like, I'm
making fun of filthy casual Commander players.
I think what Ryan was kind of implying is, like, if one person,
Josh,
can't
or
is unable to build an entire cube by themselves. But... yeah, I do like that idea, Ryan. I think that seems like a strategy to go toward building your own cube, you know?
well, especially like the switching it to a limited environment, I think would be the most jarring part for, you know, even newer players are more generally more familiar with the idea of a constructed format than the limited environment, which Cube is. It's just with more powerful cards. And certainly this is one way you can do it. I just think it's one of those things that requires a lot of patience and, you know, like a large sample size to actually get a feel with what cards do and don't work. Because again, like I mentioned earlier, maybe this one package is really good this one week and then gets just like fucking, you know, dick mode the next week. That's something you're going to have to work with and you're going to have to try it a few times, especially if you don't have a ton of experience doing this sort of thing. And balancing is still kind of an inherent issue. Plus, there are going to be certain cards that you just hate playing with. I mean, like, we've got folks in our group that really don't like getting briberied. You know? Like, that's
like,
just
to the point
a
where
thing.
They've like, almost quit playing with us. Like, so...
It, and we wish you would. But...
Savage. Savage. Yeah. I mean, is that kind of what you were talking about, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah... We see a lot of these posts where people have built cubes of their own, of the cards that they own, their collection, and that the process of building these cohesive themes, putting them into the cube, supporting them with mana fixing, and you know, some consideration toward curves and support for archetypes and other things. I think this all is a very good exercise in doing that, and that that could be really helpful for somebody who's getting started to not have this kind of the feel of that cube draft you described, where we allowed everybody to bring 45 cards, and I put 20 planeswalkers into the draft, and saw what happened.
Yeah.
21 Tibbers is an issue.
God, are you? How many are there?
A lot.
Had this conversation. Holy sorry to cut shit. You off, Ryan, but we had this conversation with our friend James.
Yeah.
Or I did. I don't remember who else was in the room, but James mentioned, he's like, I want the all Planeswalkers cube. Like, you just, where you play every Planeswalker that's ever been printed. So I had, like, I looked it up, and there's like 80 something at
yeah,
this
you
point.
Need Planeswalkers.
God, really?
It's absurd.
How many?
Well, think about, there are almost like 10 different Garrick's.
No.
There are, like, almost 10 different Chandra's. Well, okay, there's, like, what, 6 or 7?
There's like Garrick 6. Actually is pretty low, but...
I'm just saying. There are, like, 7 Jace the Mind Sculptor. Or there are, like, 7 Jace.
7 Jace the Mind Sculptor,
look,
ladies
in
and
my Rubik's Cube, there are going to be 1 Jace the Mind Sculptor in every pack. You better start buying from the vaults, all right?
You heard it here first.
Yeah. I refuse to play in a format that has less than 10 Jace the Mind Sculptors.
But yeah, there's a ton. So yes, like there, oh, wow. way more than even I thought. Like when
Jesus Christ, Ryan, you're a madman.
It was a lot of fun. I think the only one we had.
That sounds dope.
I think there were 3 Vraskas floating around.
There were a lot of Vraskas. Yeah, that was just like a one-off. People were like, "Yeah, that's fun. We'll just throw that in there." Jesus. A lot of people had it from their old standard collections. You know.
Like, yeah.
I think I still have one.
Funny.
Vraska's sweet. I missed that card. It's not very good, but it's a cool card.
Yeah. I was on a playtesting like standard group team for quite some time. I think Vraska was the biggest fight we had ever gotten into.
Oh, really?
Over half the group thinking that Vraska, when she was spoiled, was the nut, and then like a small group of us being like, this card is garbage. And who was right about that one? I'll give you a hint. It was the side I was on. All right.
Oh, so she was the nut.
The worst. The worst. Vraska's so bad. I don't know why I even thought she was going to be good. I really don't.
She was Maelstrom Pulse attached to a guy, like, attached to a walker. Like, that, you know, at that point, we had not had that printed yet. So, like, of course, when you just, like, look at a Planeswalker and its middle ability is, like, blow up any permanent, you're like, holy crap. Like, this has to be insane, right? Like,
fair.
You know,
Maelstrom Pulse is not as
good. It was a shiny new toy doing something that no other thing like it had done before. Like, of course people are going to think it's insane. So.
Fair enough. I don't know if Wizards has ever come out and said that they're never going to print a Planeswalker below, like, Mythic Rarity. Ryan, if they ever printed a common or uncommon Planeswalker, would you put it in your cube?
Yeah, there's been some attempts I've seen of uncommon Planeswalkers that are like, they have like two abilities.
Tibble.
And it was interesting, but yeah, I would certainly consider putting an uncommon Planeswalker in my cube.
Like, you're not opposed to the idea? Like. You're not opposed to the idea of Planeswalkers in your cube?
Planeswalkers currently with the cube. I don't think that the power level disparity would be that great, in all honesty.
Well, yeah, because the common uncommon cube, you know, you play a lot on the board, and Planeswalkers, you need to play onto the board to beat them, right?
So, yeah.
Overall, the environment is pretty hostile.
Modern Masters 4, Tibble it uncommon. Fuck it.
Do it.
I would honestly like to just play with any cube that had Tibalt in it. Tibalt's my favorite. That card is so bad. I would play it in my mono red devotion decks. You know what? I'm going to come up with a Tibalt package. Hold that thought. There you go. What do you think about this?
God, if
15
created.
Cards. Tibalt. Tibalt. Tibalt.
Look, we Tibalt. Need at least three cards.
Promo Tibalt.
If it's the Tibalt section of the cube, it needs to have at least two Tibalts. That's about it.
Browbeat, but only with the Tibalt art.
It's all cards with Tibalt on it.
God.
Tibalt the devil, so you got to have at least six copies of it.
Oh.
It's got an 18-card package.
Theming. Fuck.
I really hope we do get a better Tibalt card, though, because I actually really like Tibalt as a character in Magic. I liked having a Devil Planeswalker. It was pretty dope. But was just so abysmal.
We need, like, you know, Tibalt, you know, cult as fuck, and he's got, like, horse paint, looks like a black metal guitar player.
Yes.
Like, he's basically just fucking Abath, you know, some Norwegian fucking bullshit Planeswalker for, like, the Viking set that they're gonna put out, because they're going to put out a Viking set.
Yeah, I know. Well, Saskia, the non-blue,
yeah,
the one
she's
that gives
a,
your dudes,
yeah,
like,
she's a
pseudo double
Viking.
Strike. She's from the Viking plane that, like, they've hinted at. So, like, we're getting it. It's coming.
Yeah, and
it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, fucking Tibble is Norwegian black metal, and fucking, you know, Garrick is, like, Viking metal, and then, like, I don't know, like, Jace is, like, some Manowar power metal bullshit. Like,
the metal set?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the Viking set. Like, by nature, it is the metal set, you know.
All right, so
isn't cool.
Mason, you said, but right before we started to record, and I think some of them probably have gotten brought up, but you said that there were some downsides to building your cube this way. Was the work, like the effort, was that your biggest downside? Or was there actual, like, mechanical downsides, like when doing this, like drafting or playing or whatever? Is there something that you wanted to discuss, like, as a warning to people who might want to try this?
I think the inherent biggest downside is one that we've touched on, and that is the amount of work, the amount of to I think to really do it right, to really have something special, I think the amount of work that would have to go into it and the amount of commitment that you'd have to it is huge. And I think that to me is the number one red flag. And it's why I think that even though the idea is kicked around every once in a while, oh, you would have like a flexible cube. You see a lot of people talk about it when they talk about, oh, we'll have a 360 cube, and then we'll have a stack that we'll add when we need it to be 450, but then we'll just take those out. Those kinds of changes, people talk about doing them all the time, but it's a hard sell just because of the amount of work that goes into it.
Yeah.
I think that is the number one biggest hurdle in my mind.
You also have, like, zero resources. Like, you can't pull someone's, you know, cube list of this extra package of cards that stacks on their 360s. So, like, finding the information and the other, you know, otherwise tested results to bounce your ideas off of, like, it's kind of the Wild West, you know.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah. I think the amount of work put into just building it, like the first draft of it, and then actually doing the physical first draft, like, and those, like, to figure out what you're talking about, like, what actually works, what doesn't, like, what constitutes how many cards need to make, like, are needed to make this package a functioning archetype.
Yeah, and how many of these do we have to do to have a proper sample size?
That,
how do we know this
about,
thing,
like,
didn't
yeah,
work? Or,
yeah, the yeah. number of drafts you have to do with all of those conceived packages the first time through, you're talking, like, I mean, probably realistically, like 100 drafts, right? Before you can actually even change anything to where you've seen it, a deck drafted and built enough times out of each of the packages to know what's working and what isn't. And their matchups against the other packages and everything, too. And, like this is...
Yeah, like he said before, hundreds of zeros, man. the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
I think another...
See, folks, it was options aren't always a good
thing.
It
was a downside in my mind, but after what Ryan talked... it was a downside in my mind, but after what Ryan started talking about, I think it's actually more flexible than what I had originally thought about. And one of the downsides of this whole project that I was thinking about was the card availability restraint.
Yeah.
And that is that not everyone can afford a 1,000 card count box of cards that you don't use every week that are just kind of hanging out. I know you personally have your cube,
yeah.
And it's a bigger cube anyway.
Yeah.
Then you have a huge stack of cards that are on the bench.
Yeah.
You have, like, just tons of stuff, even stuff that you don't keep in your binder. You just have tons of stuff that's gone in or out or that you considered that hasn't quite made the cut.
I had enough that I could make a second cube. Like, I made the horror cube, which is not even that cheap. Like,
it's yeah, absolutely. So I think card availability, you know, because in my mind, it's this grandiose thing. It's huge. You're using every, card ever. You've got zombie aggro and mono black devotion aggro and vampires and just
you might have like six or seven actual like almost mono black packages or blocks in addition to like big red wildfire, like they might not even be the same thing, you know, mono red aggro, red control
and
support.
In my mind, you can have all these different things, and the beauty of this is that after you put it together, you can set it aside, and even if you don't get to it right away, even if you don't play with it all the time, it's still an option for you. And you know that as long as you have an eye, then every time a set comes out, you can look at any card in the set and be like, I actually think that would be kind of cool for the one package that we've had sitting in the box for a while.
Yeah.
And maybe you get a few cards and you're like, oh, that brings some new life into this thing that we haven't drafted in a little bit. But kind of the beauty of it is that you never need to take those things apart. You never need to worry about cutting some of these cards to put in new ones. You can build new packages, you know? So part of this grandiose invention in my mind is that you need to have a lot of resources tied up in these cards that you might not use all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that is
a
downside.
This is not for somebody who cycles through their cards financially often.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be able to just have these sitting around.
What Ryan said earlier about maybe it being the format of building a cube this way, maybe as a way, as an introductory method to building your first cube, I think that actually reframes that whole thing from me being a psychotic elitist to wanting every single card in the history of Magic at my disposal to like someone who has a way more limited scope, limited card availability, and the way that they would build it. So I think it's like a difference between someone's powered 360 gorgeous decked out foiled out cube to someone who maybe has like a common uncommon, you know, building cube.
Yeah, so someone who only goes to draft leagues. Right.
Yeah,
and they
I
just
think
got
like maybe
chaff
that's
sitting around.
Maybe that's the difference between like, you know, me thinking, oh, well, we have the resources we can go fucking crazy with this. So that to me in my mind was one of the barriers.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not as big of a deal as I thought it was.
Yeah.
Based on what Ryan said earlier.
It really depends on what you end up wanting to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. So that's not as big of a deal in my mind as it was before.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you what, I'm gonna make the gods block, and I'm gonna put in all of the Theros gods and all of the Amonkhet gods.
That's 15, just, right? Boom.
No, it's more. Because there's 5 monocolored Theros gods, and then there was one in each 2-color pair. So there's 15 Theros gods, and then there's the 5 Amonkhet ones, and we're getting more in the next block. So like,
oh my god, that's so many gods.
Yeah. There's gonna be like a 30 card god block.
Yep. I dig it. All right, let's do it. Other than that, I like, you know, outside of the restraints on the effort that goes into building it and the physically breaking down and putting back together of the cube after every iteration or after every couple iterations, like, re-sleeving is a huge financial investment when you have
savings of financial investment for a regular team.
Mind you, if you weren't playing with those cards all the time, then they wouldn't wear out as fast, right?
Yeah, you just have to buy the same brand of sleeves over and over again.
Yeah, you just have to pick something you really like and hope they never stop making it. Cough, cough. Other than that, like, I can't think of too many inherent downsides to the whole thing. Those are kind of where my head's at as far as, I guess. I mean, am I missing something here?
I don't know.
Is there something glaring?
I mean, Alec brought
Alec,
up quite
Alec's
a few things.
A hater. He hates.
Well, Alex, the, you know.
I'm the realist.
I was just going to say, you're the one grounded in reality here. So.
Just like every pessimist ever will tell you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan, did you have any other downsides? Because you've been throwing a lot of, like,
yeah,
questions.
Yeah, he's had the
us.
Real probing questions here. He's had the real critical analysis.
Probing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit on most of them, that, you know, power level imbalances, color and curve imbalances, making the draft process a little bit challenging to navigate, and then just making sure that the as-fan of your archetypes is not too large to put your draft on rail, I think were the big ones.
Yeah, do you think, I mean, I would probably not describe this as a beginner's cube drafting experience, right? Like, once you get all the way decked out and you have 100 different card blocks, it's probably not real easy for someone who is maybe not familiar with a lot of the cards or hasn't done a lot of cube drafting. It's probably a tough format for them to navigate, right? Where the curves might not be perfect, the color pie might not be equally represented, you know, those kinds of things can be actual hurdles in the drafting process, right?
Yeah.
So that, I could definitely see that being a downside. Though, you know, that's going to be a little bit of a you get out what you put into it type of situation. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Shit. Fucked up. Stupid game.
Alec is over here playing Puzzle and Dragons at the same time he's recording with
us. Why he's so quiet.
Well, you guys bitch every time I talk anyway.
Whoa, we've been pretty receptive this time around, I think.
I think that basically lays out the idea that I've had. I mean,
it's a really cool idea.
I think it's ambitious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. you know.
I don't hate
it. If nothing else, it is certainly ambitious.
Yeah, I don't hate it. It just seems like I'm not sure that the potential problems and the amount of time it would take to solve them are worth just actually building a better cube. Like, when this idea was first pitched to me, it sounds like a way to play with bad cards, you know, or less good cards if, you know, they're not terrible, they just don't fit the cut, you know. Part of the reason I hate the MTGO cubes is because you play with, like, 720 cards, and it's not uncommon or even impossible to build decks hoping to get one specific card or one even handful of cards and just never see them.
Yep, that's why I hate drafting cubes that are larger than the number of cards you play with.
Yeah. Now, this theoretically mitigates that in the sense that you know what you're putting in, right?
Yeah. Like,
and you're not playing with more cards than that, but it I don't know, it just seems a little too wild. I can't imagine that there won't be huge disparities in power level leading to certain packages just not ever being put in, or, you know, I mean, like, we talked about doing a power package, and of course, like, I've got a huge boner for that, but I feel like the existence of that package just shits on so many other packages because the amount that they get better relative to the power is so much less than something else that it's like, is it even worth doing it? Like, I mean, you got your fucking energy package that you're writing down there. I'm sure it's fine, and I'm sure the power is better because a lot of things are better with power. In fact, everything is better with power. But then you got dope-ass blue cards right above it. And, like, I just can't imagine how dope-ass blue cards isn't just worlds better with the presence of that power package. And I feel like there will be so many of those, like, little quirks. Like, X, Y, and Z will be so much better than A, B, and C, but not D, E, and F. I'm just not sure what we're going for here, you know. And if you guys don't mind that kind of, you know, fucking shootout, someone gets dick mode. I mean, you cut Mana Crypt and Soul Ring. I'm just saying, you know, I'm still mad about that.
makes me happy every time you're mad about it.
Yeah, so. we're still not over it.
They have a tape line drawn through their house now. Yep. And on the tape it says, "Bring back Mana Cryptid Soul Ring." It's been a little uncomfortable.
It's just soul rings glued together.
Alex sitting on the opposite side of the table than us right now because he's on the one side of the apartment. Josh and me are hanging out on the other.
I'm also outvoted, so it's lonely. I have a cat.
I was gonna say you have your cat.
Yeah. Cat doesn't get to cube with us.
Ryan, the phone Ryan is on our side also.
Yeah. That's important. Ryan is spiritually on our side.
Is that true, Ryan?
I'm a boy.
Commit, pussy.
I really enjoyed the Sacred Diary, so I would be.
Here's what I think of that.
Oh my. Jesus, man. What's wrong with you? Gotta get that checked out.
That's what I think of that.
The disparity in power level. The disparity.
Child.
I'm gonna get us back to the point at hand here. All right, wrapping up. I hadn't considered the disparity in power level too much when I came up with this idea. Though it sounds like it. Now that you guys have brought it up, it definitely does seem coffee. Like.
I'm sorry, Mason.
Come on, guys.
How's that for creamer, bitch? A little bit of sugar, a little bit of brown sugar.
All right, anyways. You hadn't considered the power level disparity. Continue.
Yeah, and I do think what Ryan mentioned at the very beginning of the cast, and I know I already spent like a minute talking about this, just to reiterate, the idea of giving these different packages power level ratings, that seems like almost a necessity in my mind. And maybe that would be one of the trickier parts of the cube construction, because giving everything a somewhat fair rating is nearly impossible when you consider the way that it interacts with all the other packages, like exactly what Alec just said.
Yeah.
A, B, and C being more powerful than X, Y, Z, but not as powerful as L, M, N, O, P.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems ridiculously difficult. Yeah. And I hadn't considered it too much. That was maybe my most glaring
oversight. Yeah.
During this whole theoretical build in my head. Let me just go ahead and bring this point up real quick. And
does it contain Delver of Secrets?
Delver of Secrets is one of them. Really, it's like every Magic card ever printed. So let me just
point out. Are you strapped in, Ryan?
General philosophy I have it. Yeah, let's philosophy about magic with Mason, real quick.
Kill me.
Can you have your own podcast?
I actually think it'll just be 60 minutes of me talking into a microphone about things that I think about magic. I think
special guest star Michael Flores.
People do not.
Oh, dang!
I don't think people give enough credit to different magic cards. I actually think it is way easier to win at Magic than people seem to think, and I think you can generally win with fucking anything. Now, this statement might not make sense, but let me try to extrapolate a little bit. You can take a rag, you can take a bad card, a stereotypically bad card, and shove it in your cube. And if you have a person motivated to do so, I believe that that person can absolutely draft, play, and win with that card, whatever generally bad card it is. And I think that over the last few years of cube drafting, I have proved this over and over and over again. And that sounds super conceited, so let me try to reel it back a little bit. There are lots and lots of cards that I personally really like in cube. And it's like pulling teeth sometimes, trying to get them included. And generally my method that I've employed for the longest time is just include it for a little while. I'll play with it, and if I can win with it all the time, then maybe you'll see that it's a good card, and you'll keep it in your cube. And we've had this discussion a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, six people approached me last week and talked about how they really don't like Champion of the Parish. I'm like, no, you gotta keep Champion of the Parish. Here, wait, give me a week. Let me draft some Champion of the Parish. I'll try to show off that how great it is, and maybe everyone will see, you know? And I think power level disparity, I think power level disparity with Magic cards is not as huge as a lot of people think it is, because I think that outside of, like, cards that are really poorly rated, like, you know, mana cost to effectiveness ratio and, you know, cards that just don't do anything, I think, like, as long as the card does something interesting, does something, and is not terribly overcosted, I think more cards than people will give credit are viable. I think you see it time and time again with people's pet cards. They're like, I included this card and I win with it all the time, but other people don't seem to have the same luck with it. And it's like, well, you knew what you were doing, you know what you're trying to draft, and you know what you're doing with it, you know what you're trying to draft, and that makes it work for you better than it does for other people. So I think if you have an experienced group of players and a high caliber of play happening in your cube draft, I think that power level disparity amongst cards does not hurt you as much, because people can make people can make decks work.
Yeah.
Regardless of maybe...
Great, let's put in Sol Ring and Mana Crypt.
I mean, like, there's a reason that you can include Sol Ring and Mana Crypt in a cube and have that cube be functional. Like, mm-hmm. It was for the longest time, and it's not spontaneously, it's not now, it's just... But those cards are a huge spike in power level compared to everything else. And yet, they don't always win the draft. I mean, no. More often than not, the guy who had Sol Ring did not go 3-0. I mean, yeah. That happens all the time. So there is a reason that everyone's cube has a huge power level disparity. The best card in your cube and the worst card in your cube probably have a huge swing in power level anyway. And the fact that maybe the top 10 cards are the best cards in the game of Magic, and the bottom 10 are like Elite Vanguard and Jackal Pup,
yeah,
are like, that's a pretty big difference. So power level disparity, I don't think matters as much as people give it credit for, or the amount of weight that people give it, just based on the fact that if you are really good at Magic, you can make a lot of things work. You see this happen all the time in other formats too, not just Cube. Shouty Yasuoka has made like a career playing on the Pro Tour with like decks that people kind of scratch their head at and go, what's going on
here? Like,
how is he even winning? And yet he was the only one in the entire tournament in this 400 man Pro Tour playing, and he top eights and makes it look like super easy.
Like,
hey.
Like his recent Pro Tour win at Aether Revolt, when he won with the Grixis control deck, like right after they interviewed him and said, like, you know, would you recommend this deck to other players? Like, it seemed to work really well for you. He's like, no, Pro Tour deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a Pro Tour deck. Do not play this deck. Like, it was a metagame call, and, like, there's a lot of cards, like, one ofs and two ofs that were, like, really wonky, but he needed them
all
in that
the way
deck
back
to make
in
it work.
Pro Tour Scars of Mirrodin. It was a block constructed Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And the general consensus on the format was that it was a two deck format. You could either play mono red, you could play, like, Tempered Steel. And the Channel Fireball guys were really big at that time, and they played Tempered Steel and basically made the rest of the field look like garbage. Like, they just crushed everyone. And then you saw the top seven deck list, and it was like some mono red, some Tempered Steel. And what's that seventh place deck list? Shouty Yasuoka playing four color control with like Horizon Spell Bombs.
Yeah, I remember that.
And just, you'll look, and it's just the raggedy ass, like, worst looking pile of cards you've ever seen. Just, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, these cards are great, and this deck's great, and I obviously won because I'm great, so fuck it. It's like, well, how did that work? And it's like, your deck's so much weaker than everyone else's. Well, you must have been doing something right, right?
Yeah.
So, I guess, especially when people talk about cards not being good enough in their cubes, I think they need to take a step back and realize that most things are good enough. In my opinion, most things are good enough, especially when you surround them with a bunch of other powerful cards. Because at the end of the day, if my 8-drop is not the best 8-drop in the world, if my 8-drop that I'm cheating into play is an Ulamog's Crusher and not a Gristlebrand, if I'm cheating into play effectively enough, it will still kill you.
Well, I think what you mentioned, you know, the disparity between Sol Ring, Mana Crypt, and everything else, I think what it comes down to is, like, seriously, it's the amount of butthurt it generates. Like, how much people hate losing to a certain card this way, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those where, like, if I kill you with eight different fucking seven drops off of Sneak Attack, everyone's going to hate Sneak Attack, right? Like, they're probably not going to hate individual eight drops, depending. You know, like, I mean, if I dick stomp you with fucking Hill Giant because I cast it on turn one with Mana Crypt, yeah. you're not going to hate the Hill Giant. You're going to hate the Mana Crypt. Mm-hmm. You know? And, like, yeah, those are still beatable combinations. Those things can lose and have. I've cast Grizzlebrand on turn two and fucking lost.
Yep. I watched it happen.
Yeah. You know, I've
You cast Emrakul twice in a game and lost.
Fucking Ice Manipulator and Maze of It. That's some bullshit magic cards. but I lost. Like, all of these things can totally happen. And so it really does come down to what your folks just hate losing to. You know?
Sure.
I mean, you have to make consent. Like, that's the thing, folks. Like, Cube is a political format. Maybe not to the point that Commander is, because, you know, it's a different sort of interaction, but, like, no one's gonna play a cube if they think it's all the cards are stupid, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. whether they think they're too bad, too good, or fuck all, whatever,
yeah.
you know, like, you have to make certain concessions, and, especially if you're talking about a Wild West format where we're just slapping packages of cards together, like, there's gonna be some erroneous butthurt as you find your way in. You know, as you find what works, as you find what doesn't.
There is going to be butthurt as you find your way in.
Yeah. that was not a slip of the tongue. God. That was absolutely intentional.
Slip of the tongue.
What up, ladies? Whatever. You know, my bills don't pay themselves. But I'm just saying.
Here's a good question for Josh and Ryan, who are both Cube owners. How often do you see a card in your... How often have you put a card in your cube and people tell you that they think it's too weak or they don't think it's very good, but you've definitely seen it kick ass and you know how powerful it is. You know how good it is. And you know that everyone else is just fucking wrong. Like, that happens all the time, right?
Ryan, you want to answer that first?
Fuck, don't say Plated Crusher. Don't say Plated Crusher.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain cards that I think it's more of that it's a matter of perspective. That when you build a cube and you curate it and you spend a lot of time working with it, that you have a perspective on the cube that nobody else does, and that that leans that the reasons that you're supporting that card are always apparent to everyone, and that sometimes that can lead to some disagreements about, yeah, whether a card's pulling its weight or not. That's kind of where I land on that.
Well, that's what I meant by erroneous butthurt. Yeah. Like, it seems almost incorrect. Yeah. For someone to be upset about those things, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like this card because I just don't. Like, how many fucking times have you heard some, like, 10-year-old at Target say some shit like that and you just want to slap the little bastard for their parents?
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is the same thing.
Yep.
You know? So,
I have included a number of pet cards and had people tell me, like, really? This is in here? Like, come on, Josh. Like, this is nowhere near on the power level of X, Y, or Z. And it's like, you're absolutely right. It's not. But I'm still going to kill you with it. And I do. Sometimes I get killed with that card in my deck. But, like...
Dude, we're talking, like, 8 out of 10 here.
Oh, come on.
I'm just saying, like, your track record's not great.
Whoa! Josh has been kicking ass lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because he took out the stupid pet cards.
It's a lot better than the, like, 1 in 10 you're fucking...
Yeah, what are you...
1 in 7, dude.
1 in 7 in the last 8 matches.
1 in 7.
Look, I'm telling you, you gotta... really step that up. You're making the podcast look bad, okay?
Dude, like,
turn it up to 11, you know, figure out what you gotta do.
I'm just saying, when Creighton bets me that I'm not gonna win a game in the second QG, because the first one, 0-3, 0-6 in games, like, yeah. I built a great deck. I built my bullshit, you know, black-green aristocratic deck, and it looked really good on paper, and fucking shit the bed so hard, I swear to God, I got every bad matchup, did as many poor draws as I could. I'm pretty sure I punted at least one play, but, in fact, I'm almost positive that I punted somewhere, but, I mean, I'm just saying, you couldn't have gotten worse luck than I've had lately, combined with, you know, I think the real kicker is that my decks don't look bad. Like, they're not incoherent messes. I get rewarded all the drafts and just fucking shit the bed. At least I won some games last time. That was a plus, you know. I mean, little victories. But yes, I am currently the worst, far and away the worst player in our podcast, you know.
Ryan doesn't even cube draft with us. He's just, like, he's just chiming in with the theory, the math.
I mean, by virtue of owning his own cube, I'm sure he has lost less than I have.
Ryan is very good at his own cube. You know, not everyone is always the best at their own cubes. Typically, they are. But Ryan kicks ass at his own cube.
Why don't you just come out and say it, Mason?
Look, you're the worst cube owner player I've ever met in my whole life. Probably just shouldn't own the cube anymore. Sell it. Fucking be done with it.
All right.
It's reasonable.
That's reasonable.
I have bills to pay, so
you can sell it to me, where I will become the worst cube owner in this house.
Jeez.
I'm just saying, like, what's gonna happen? I'm gonna go on like a month of tearing up 3-0s, but for now, like, you know, heads in the gutter. Yeah. Hey, I told Josh I kind of didn't want to play Magic anymore.
You did. He's like, I kind of hate Magic right now.
You know, I actually had this discussion after we were done with our last cube draft, me and Tim and the other guys, we went out to get
Scott.
Food.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about stuff, and one of the guys, Scott, mentioned, he was like, so your deck kind of shit the bed tonight, huh? And in our last cube draft, I went 2-2. And I was like, yeah, it didn't work out as well as I wanted to. I thought my deck was fine. Mostly it's because I played against him in the last round, this person who was questioning me, and my deck didn't do anything against him, and I just fucking died really quickly. It was embarrassing, actually. My deck just didn't function almost at all. I missed land drops, I was, like, didn't get the right colors, I didn't cast a lot of spells, like, he just ran me over with a bunch of, like, ramp into giant 10 drops. It was a mess. But he didn't see my other matches. He didn't know what my deck was even really supposed to do. I was just like, turn one Gravecrawler. He's like, cool. Skyship Sovereign, Ulamog, you die. I was like, all right, that was good. That was a good match. All right, let's pack that one up. But I had to try to explain to him. I'm like, you know, I've gotten to a point in my cube drafting career where if I'm really motivated to try to win, I draft differently than when I'm dicking around having fun and just want to cube draft, right? When I feel like when I'm motivated to win and I really want to spike a cube draft, I can draft in a way that will result in a very good record. I mean, I'm not going to say I'll win every cube draft I want to, but I do think there's a definite switch that flips in my brain where I say, I really want to win tonight. Like, I don't care what I have to do, and I will draft the most cutthroat deck possible to try to win. And then there's the other side of things where I think to myself, I really want to see how good this particular thing can be. Last week it was drafting Psychotog and Shadowborn Vizier together. And I was like, this sounds great. I'm going to try to do that specific thing and just see where it goes. And I wound up going 2-2 and my record wasn't great. The week before that, there was a little prize on the line and I was like, I really want to win. I drafted the Aristocrats and I think I might have dropped a game. And just fucking crushed everyone I played against. My team lost terribly, I will add. I was the only one with a winning record on my team, and the other team members of our delightful podcast here crushed our dicks.
Yeah.
So that was...
We did.
That was great.
Yeah, see? So it's not all bad.
But I think, like, the difference between, like, trying to win and trying to, like, explore things and do stuff for fun is, you know, there's some tension there. You have to decide, like, I'll go on kicks where I'm like, I want to just draft Eldrazi, and I'll draft Eldrazi for, like, 2 solid months. And my record will be all over the place. It'll be like, ah, you went 0-3, you went 1-2, you went 3-0, you went 2-1, you went 3-0, you went 0-3. Like, week to week, just giant swings. Yeah. No one fucking knows. And then we'll all sit down and we'll get, like, serious, and we'll all try to draft the best decks we can, and, you know, things fall where they may. But I think the mentality you take in your cube draft, I mean, obviously affects how you do.
Yeah.
If you sit down and you just think you're going to force the same thing every single time, then you're going to have great records on the weeks where that works out, and you're going to have terrible records on the weeks where it doesn't.
Yeah.
if you sit down and you think, I'm Alec and I only want to draft Reanimator. And then...
Dude, I hadn't drafted Reanimator in months. I caught the Crank Daddy like 2/3 of the way through pack 2.
I believe you.
Like, I wasn't even trying to play that deck until I saw Animate Dead on the wheel in pack 1. And I was like, fuck it, I got all these green cards, I got a handful of black cards, and then just got fed.
Yeah.
Like, got paid, got all my lands in, like, the third pack. It was fucking dope. My deck was sick as shit. And then, like, I swear to God, could not have more embarrassingly pooped the bed. Like, it just did not happen.
The last time I got a chance to draft Ryan's Cube before he left for the South, I remember I did terribly. We did, like, 2 cube drafts back-to-back, and I went 0-6. Like, didn't win a match. And part of it was he had added all these new cards. I had come over, like, the day before and helped him add all these new cards. And then during the draft, I was just... Typically, when I draft common uncommon cubes, I'm just completely cutthroat. I just want to win and prove how smart and how much better I am than everyone else. That's my only mentality. But I just helped him work on his cube, and I was like all fucking starry-eyed and was like, I just want to play with all these new cards, slapping them all together. And then my decks were basically terrible, and I fucking died.
So how much smarter were you than them that week, Mason?
Not very. Don't worry, in case any of you guys are wondering at home, God, how does Mason get away with being so cocky? It's because everyone shits on me all the time.
I mean, he is the only 06, one at this table who is an SCG champion.
That 06 was one of the most painful nights of recent memory. It was not fun. It was a lot of losing and a lot of getting shit on for losing. It was not a good time.
Yeah.
Ryan, how often do you catch yourself exploring archetypes or just spending entire drafts trying to force one specific thing instead of necessarily just trying to draft as competitively as you can?
I do find myself catching on, trying to force the new thing more of as just, you know, a test.
Yeah. Because you figure if you don't test it, then who's going to, right?
Yeah.
And when you need data, why not do it yourself?
Yeah. All right, guys. It's getting a little late for me, and my wife's calling me to bed here, so I think I'm going to sign off here.
Wow, someone's married. Just drop that one on us. Jeez.
Ryan, right. Thank you for being on our cast and for providing insight and for taking as much time out of your busy life to do this on a random weeknight. I know you drive pretty long distances to do your job, so it is appreciated.
Yeah, it's always a delight. Hopefully we can have you back on next time or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, sometime soon, for sure.
I still have no idea why you like us.
That's a good sign, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right. Thanks, boss.
Take
Bye.
It easy.
I think that about wraps us for what we're doing too, right?
Yeah, we kind of got off track there at the end, but not, it wasn't bad. It was kind of a good set of tangents, I think, so.
Me lamenting my losses? Yeah. Great tangent.
I mean, we could hit, I don't know how much time we're at. I mean, we're not even at the 2-hour mark yet.
No, I'm actually kind of surprised. I feel like we covered a lot of stuff. And
right?
We're not
I was actually really happy. If we wanted to, I don't know, you had all that Reddit stuff. If you wanted to cover maybe one person's question or comment, or whether we wanted to kind of...
Mailbag!
Mailbag?
Just a quick
mailbag. Maybe a quick one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I like mailbags. Oh, let's do the one about correct arts, because you and I apparently have a very different definition of what qualifies as correct magical art. All right,
yeah, because I don't know if we'll do, like, we could do a whole episode on just art. We could certainly do a whole episode on, like, maybe pimping the cube, and we can retouch art when we go to that. But yeah, someone asked, talking about, like, how do you pick the correct art for your cards, or, like, does art matter? And
yeah.
Me,
Josh,
I'll go first, me being... an artist and a person with a degree in art, in a art field, art matters a lot.
R-E hip fuck.
Yeah. I take a lot of time deciding, like, which cards to include, or which versions of cards to include based on art. People ask me all the time over the years that we've been drafting my cube, they're like, oh, do you have, you know, X promo of this card? And I'm like, no, that card's garbage. that promo sucks. And they're like, what are you talking about? It's a promo. Don't you want, like, all the promos? Like, don't you want all the foils? I'm like, no, not if the art is garbage, because I personally want my cube to look the best that it does. And that doesn't always mean foiling it. That doesn't always...
Looking at you, Experiment 1 F&M promo.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there's just some...
I love the promos.
There's...
No, you
just...
don't.
I do.
There's just some really bad-looking promo art out there. There's really bad, like, versions of cards. And, like, even if it's, like, the newest one, the art isn't always the best on the most, you know, shiny new version of a card. Like,
yeah, that's the oldest version.
Yeah.
Yeah, the oldest
and, like,
version is correct.
So, I think... I mean, at the end of the day, for me... It's the cube owner's personal preference. Like, you're the one who spent all the time building the cube. You're the one who wants, or is going to most likely be purchasing these cards. Like, you better damn get the ones you want, right? Like, the ones that you like to look at.
Sure. I mean, like, if you got, like, fucking $400 to drop on some of these judge foils for cards that are, like, you know, 30.
Yeah.
Fucking have at it. Like, lose your damn mind.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some folks who put that value in the card looking better because it's foil or because it's just a more valuable card.
Right.
You know, I'm Mr. Old School. Give me the old school arts every fucking time. You know, Triskelion? Yeah. I like the stupid trash can Triskelion. You know?
Yeah.
Like, not the new Mirrodin one. Yeah. You know, like, is it stupid? Yeah, probably. But it's the old one. It's the right one.
Well, and like, you know, your roommate and friend Reed, his all foreign cube, he got the most original and recognizable art for as many of the cards in that cube as he possibly could because...
That are in foreign, yeah.
Yeah, that are in foreign, you know, because...
You have and then he randomly decides, like, some cards just need to be beta. He's like, well, you know, beta supersedes the foreign, and that doesn't even make sense. Whatever, anyway.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so he has this, like, weird little hiccup where he's like, yeah, I want everything to be exactly as you described. Old, like, as old and as recognizable as possible and in foreign. Unless they're beta. If I can get them in beta, you know, beta. Beta's better. It's like, what the fuck? What's the point of all the... No, whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, I do think there are a lot of the oldest arts that look better than new ones. I also really appreciate... The way Magic art was created in its early years as versus now, there's a lot of really sick-ass art on cards nowadays. But it's very, very literal to what the card is, and it's very formulaic. And, like, look at Stasis. What the fuck is going on in Stasis?
No one knows.
There's a fox and a clown and a red ball, and they're all on a seesaw, and... What is happening?
It's like some neo-cubist bullshit.
I don't know how it's supposed to, like,
it looks like, like Picasso did it, but, like, bad, and, like...
when he was 10.
Yeah, right? Like, but I love some of that stuff, because, like, art was, the art direction wasn't super formulaic back there, and there wasn't, like, Warrior with a spear, like, raging at somebody through a firestorm, and, like, the card's called, like, Fire Spear. You know, or, you know, whatever. Or, like, like literal searing spear.
Fire
it's a
stormer.
Spear made of fire going through a guy's chest.
I think
like,
that bullshit limited equipment, Fire Shrieker,
like,
it's actually a staff that is, like,
shrieking
and yelling.
Fire. Yelling, and there's fire coming out. Yeah, like...
Yeah, yeah, lightning bolt. It's just a bolt of lightning.
Yeah, like, I mean, come on, what the hell? No. But, like, I think, like, there's
some
really...
Rush, you suck.
I think the quality... of art being produced for Magic cards today is obviously off the charts. We have better tools. We have, you know, there's technology. A lot of the art is digitally done nowadays, which allows you to do a lot of things the artists couldn't do back then or didn't know how to do necessarily because, like, art as a major medium for gaming was, like, is very fledgling in Magic's early years. So the quality of production is higher, but I think that a lot of the original arts, like, there's a nostalgic purposes, you know, which is, I think, what draws you, right, Alec? Like,
part of it,
yeah. You know.
And the lack of theming, because, like, ever since the introduction of Planeswalkers and these, like, very specific planes, you know, like, as a result, like, Magma Spray is going to have, like, a fucking Koth on it or something of that nature, whereas, you know, Lightning Bolt before, like, I mean, it's just a fucking Lightning Bolt, you know, or, like, even when you had, like, you know, the Sisseys and the Gerards and that sort of thing, like, you had them as characters, and, you know, the Weatherlight story arcs and all that, but, like, planes in that sense didn't exist, you know, just not...
Yeah,
the,
there
not
was
as...
a multiverse, but we weren't visiting multiple planes, we were only on one.
Yeah,
and you're only following a handful, like, one dude was a fucking Minotaur.
Yeah.
You know?
That was his whole character, just a Minotaur.
Yeah.
All right. Josh's answer where you should pick what you want and, you know, it's your own personal preference. I think that's a pussy answer. Here's what I'm going to give you the realness. All right? You should always get everything in foil. Everything that could possibly be a promo should be. And the most important thing is to always try to get everything in as new a borders as you can, because that's the only way to make it consistent. And consistency is key. That's the most important part of picking the arc for your cube.
So you should never include cards that aren't in the newest border.
I'm not saying... When possible to not do so, you should not.
Yeah, like treasury and shit, you're just going to have to make
if
concessions.
If you're like, well, I really want this card, and it was only printed in this old-ass set, and it's ugly as fuck, but I have to play it in my cube, fine. I'll concede that you're allowed to do that. I would encourage you to do that. But if at any point you can make the decision, you're like, oh, I can use this Beta Dark ritual, it's all fucking old and ugly, or I can use the new Judge promo, because it's got a new border and looks fucking like every other Magic card in my cube, I think you should make that decision.
Fun fact, the From the Vault 21s, indestructible.
Oh my god! So yeah, little mini story. So I alter cards, we've mentioned that in the cast before. I haven't done a lot of foil peel alters. Side story to my side story. I'm really high on this movie, The Void, lately. It's a throwback to, like, John Carpenter's The Thing. It's a movie that's supposed to be, like, very reminiscent of old 80s, like, body horror, like, Clive Barker stuff. Anyways, so the cover art on the DVD is awesome, and there's a triangle that's, like, the theme. And I wanted to put this image on a dark ritual because it just fit perfectly, right? It's a guy, like, performing a ritual to bring a being onto another plane of existence. So I get out my From the Vault 20 dark ritual that's in my cube because I want the triangle of light in the center of the image to be foiled. So I'm going to, like, alter this foil by erasing off with acetone the middle of the card. Can't do it. I tried actual erasers. I tried scratching it off. I tried, like, dousing it in acetone and nail polish remover and rubbing alcohol. The thing looks like I haven't fucking touched it. I even, like, showed it to Alec, and he's like, yeah, I can't even tell.
Like, wow.
So, From the Vault 20 cards, actually indestructible. You can do whatever you want to them, and they're going to look perfectly brand new. So.
All right, quick, someone get a video of someone, like, what's the cheapest card from that set? Someone spill a Coke all over it. I need to see this phenomena in action.
Yeah.
I want to move to microwaves. I want to see.
Run them over with your car.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
I mean, I could take an X-Acto to it and probably, like, destroy it, but, like, you know, if you're trying to preserve it and alter it in any
fashion, that is really weird.
You can't. See, yeah, I don't know what coating they put on there, but it is, like, it's top notch.
There's a hot tip for you guys. That way you can come away from today's podcast saying, at least I learned something.
Yep.
Another addition to the art thing, Josh does alter cards, and for a while, I forgot what Recurring Nightmare looked like, because I only remembered what his altered version looked like.
Yeah, I have a lot of...
What,
like,
are the...
I think a lot of people have said that to me before about...
I forgot what mind twist looked like.
Well, why don't you also take this opportunity to, like... You still have a Facebook page that you have all your alters posted to, right?
I do.
If you ever want to see his work.
Yeah, it's... I actually don't know the actual...
It's the Richter Lens, isn't it?
I think it is still, facebook.com/TheRichterLens. Like, The Richter, my last name, R-I-C-H-T-E-R, Lens, L-E-N-S. It's the page is not called The Richter Lens, though. Like, the title of the page is Josh Richter Alters and Other Art. So
It's cool.
I have not posted anything on there in quite some time. I've been kind of, like, out of altering for actual months in a row now, but I'm going to pick it back up soon.
He was supposed to alter a Lost Legacy, but replace Chandra's father's image with Harambe for me, but he never did it, so...
I actually still have that Lost Legacy set aside to do that for you.
I know you do.
It's not that I've forgotten.
And there's been, like, two Lilianas that need to turn to Katy Perry's.
Yeah, when I first met Alec at F&M many moons ago, he found out when I started getting into altering, he was one of the first people and asked me if I could put Katy Perry on his Liliana of the Veil.
Which was, like, fucking $80 at the time, and everyone thought I was insane.
Yeah, and it still is. Like, it's still an expensive-ass magic card. And I did it, and it's dope.
Yeah, it is great. One of my...
The way I met you was we played a match, and afterwards you go, can you put hammer pants on a cause of the hammer?
I don't know if you guys have ever looked, but you can actually put hammer pants on a lot of Planeswalkers. The blue-black Tezzeret, the old one, Tezzeret Agent of Bolas, he would do some kick-ass hammer pants. Karn Liberated, where he's standing, like, arms akimbo, ready to fuck shit up, he would look dope with some hammer pants. Just throwing it out there, if anyone ever puts hammer pants on their Planeswalkers.
Can we put a romper on Karn?
One of the new male rompers that they're making?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's a great idea.
Or like some Jinkos.
Really?
Like, we need a plane over this arms cross. There's got to be one. Like some fucking Gideon just slaps some Jinkos out of
There are definitely a lot of Gideons where he's like got his arms way out there. But,
all right, I think that about wraps us up.
Tap out shorts.
The Rubik's Cube. An experiment not for everyone. Certainly not for the faint of heart.
It's not for us.
It is for us. I'm convinced. We're gonna do it. We're gonna do it.
Oh god.
I might put some thought into the different packages. We'll see how far we get if like the work just drains me.
Bogs us down too much.
Yeah. But it was a fun thought experiment at the very, very least. So I hope you guys enjoyed. Hit us up on, you know, Reddit, our Facebook page.
Yeah, a really good one would
be the blog page.
If you can help us come up with maybe a list or a package or an idea that you like, either 15, 30, 45, whatever you can come up with. Cards, maybe an idea.
Yeah.
Hit us up. Let us know on the comments section.
Yep.
And, you know, help us get the ball rolling. Because I got to convince these two.
We tend to answer, for future reference for all of you, we tend to answer the Facebook page the quickest because all three of us have access. These two jokers aren't really on Reddit as often as I am.
So. I can't really read.
Yeah, he's illiterate. He learned in a D&D campaign not that long ago.
Yeah, god damn it.
All right, anyways, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, as always. Until next time.
Yay!